unique service that allows pet owners to plan ahead for the care of their beloved dogs and cats. Learn more about Paws Forever programs, animals, volunteer opportunities, and ways to donate at pawsforever.org. Thanks, WCHL, for caring about animals in our community.
WCHL's Chapel Hill Carborough weather brought to you this morning by the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce. You can travel down to Cuba with the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber in late October. Join a free information session, which happens later today, 5:30 p.m. at Carolina 1663. That's at the Sheraton Chapel Hill Hotel. Find out more at carolinachamber.org/Cuba. Your weather forecast looks like this. Pretty good. 53 degrees right now. Lots of sunshine. Not as warm with the highs in the middle 60s. Tonight, clear, cooler with a low in the middle 30s. And then tomorrow, another really nice day. Sunshine with a high in the middle 60s. So that's our forecast. And it looks like a really good day. Listen to the Chapel Hill Carborough Forum. It comes up throughout the day here on WCHL. And you definitely do not want to miss it. WCHL's Community Forum is coming up next.
This hour of the Morning News with Ron Stutz is brought to you by Bredman's Restaurant. Open at 7 a.m. daily and serving breakfast all day. Bredman's on Rosemary Street, a Chapel Hill tradition since 1974.
It's 8 o'clock.
This is 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL. Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
The following is a special presentation from WCHL News, winner of the Edward R. Murrow Award for Excellence in Journalism.
Welcome to the 2015 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapel Borough's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. Our opening panel is Town and Gown, and it begins now.
This is Jem Hevner, and it's a pleasure to welcome such a distinguished panel. And they are, and we want to say hello to all of them, UNC Chancellor Carol Folt.
It's wonderful to be here, Jim. Thank you.
And Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt.
Great to be here.
Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle.
Thanks, Jim. I always enjoy this event.
Chairman of the Orange County Commission, Earl McKee.
I'm looking forward to the conversation.
And Hillsborough Mayor Tom Stevens.
Delighted to be here, Jim.
Thank you all for taking time to come and be a part of this forum.
Let's start with a one-minute opener so our listeners can hear from you quickly and see what's on the top of your mind. Chancellor, your institution is the oldest. You have more constituents, and you also come earlier in the alphabet. So we're going to start with you. What's at the top of the university's to-do list with local governments?
Well, we're very excited because it's graduation. So right now we're in that mode. But a lot of things to get working on this summer. We're beginning a very comprehensive master planning process, and everyone in this room will, of course, be working on that with us. We're very excited about that. We're also very excited about the students' public service. They're out in the community all the time, and we always have new initiatives that we're working on that. I might be most excited about some of the changes that are happening with the innovation and entrepreneurial spaces downtown and our ideas to work across that. And of course, we're getting ready to open the new hospital in Hillsborough, so no shortage of things to work on with everybody.
With folks across the street, and right across the street, Chapel Hill Mayor Kleinschmidt.
Yes. Yeah, we're the university and the town have been doing, I think, some extraordinary work setting a model and setting a really high bar for communities and higher education for around the country. Carol mentioned a few of them, and those are some of the exciting and kind of flashy things. But, you know, it goes all the way down to how we're handling our recycling and our waste. We're having conversations with the university that we haven't had in a generation. So, you know, I'm really proud of the relationship that we've been able to build and tackling these kinds of issues that we thought were so far. We at one point just thought they were impossible to come to a meeting of the minds around, and here we are, and we're really working well together.
And just as integrated into this community from the Paris of the Piedmont, Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle.
Yes. You know, when I listened to Mark speak, I was thinking about how people often say Carrboro is going down the road that Chapel Hill went down several years ago. And so a lot of the very same issues that Mark and Chancellor Folt are dealing with these days are ones that we're approaching or are already dealing with as well. Issues revolving around transit, walkability, how to get to campus, how to get our employees to campus and back, and then also ways that we market together. I was thinking about on the Visitors Bureau how all of our towns, including Hillsborough, everyone at this table, and the university work together to market the area as a place for visitors to come and visit and enjoy our community and spend money and then go home.
Earl McKee, you represent the whole darn county. This includes the city people here, but also the different world of rural Orange. What's your top priority here today?
I think the top priority is to continue discussing with the towns today and in the future things like the implementation of the recently agreements on rural recycling or countywide recycling. We're going to make further tweaks on our UDO regulations to increase the availability of opportunity for economic development. The recent, the last tweak that we had on that was to permit ag support enterprises in the county and then in cooperation with the towns to expand that into the rural buffer. And so that was successful. And then I think the decision on this past Tuesday night to the vote was to place a bond on the November 2016 referendum for a bond for schools for $125 million will be a big topic of conversation.
UDO?
Unified Development Ordinance.
Ordinance. You live in that world, but
yes,
lot of our listeners.
I appreciate that the request for clarification.
Hillsborough Mayor Tom Stevens, you're not just the smallest here. I'm sorry, you're also at the end of that alphabet, so I'll put the question to you after the others have talked. What do you need from them?
Well, you know, what's on top of mind in Hillsborough are some things that have already been mentioned. It's a cool place to be. The Riverwalk's not quite a year old. People loving to be up there last Friday. So the reasons for visiting Hillsborough and developing tourism and doing that on a not just on the local level but on the regional level through the county and through the triangle. Homes opening up in our area, just cut a ribbon on the Waterstone. They've already sold 32 houses there, and Forest Ridge is opening up. So we have a lot of folks who are moving to Hillsborough, that whole notion about growth and how do we keep the economic vibrancy. And then third, we're just excited about, we're very, very excited about the hospital opening up. The campus is already open for services, but the ribbon cutting on the hospital itself. And so that just strengthens our connection with UNC. So we're all part of the larger Triangle community and part of the Orange County community. It's really working together. We're facing some of the same issues, although we're in slightly a different bubble sometimes.
Is that an evolving change from the past, that Hillsborough is becoming more integrated with the southern part of the county?
Yes. I think it's certainly a distinct area of the county and has its own distinct place and character, but we're facing the same issues as people say. Sometimes Carrboro is facing the same that Chapel Hill faced. You know, people are saying about Hillsborough, we're kind of like where Carrboro used to be, you know, a while ago. So I think we're all struggling with issues of growth and what our character is in our community.
Does the transit system go to Hillsborough yet?
Yes, it does. We have a very vibrant connection, the 420 bus that goes between Chapel Hill and Hillsborough. We have a fledgling circulator route, so transportation and connectivity is one of the absolute major issues in Hillsborough.
And Carrboro and Hillsborough contributes to that?
Yes. That's a joint county and town
and
initiative.
Town.
And then we're also working with TTA and with Chapel Hill Transit.
Earl McKee.
On that particular item, the half-cent sales tax that was implemented a couple of years ago for transportation has allowed us to place another Triangle Transit route starting that will run from Mebane to Durham through Hillsborough. That is, there will be provided a connection with the 420 back to Chapel Hill, which will really increase the connectivity throughout the center part of the county with the southern part of the county.
So that's... Let's start then with the buses. A lot of folks, even as we are talking about this, are standing out there right now waiting for a bus somewhere. And you're about to run out of money. Actually, you have run out of money. The town hired a consultant to study the bus system here, which is the second largest transit system in the state, and to try to figure out how to keep this going. And the consultant said, at this moment, the Chapel Hill transit operations are not financially sustainable in the long term, so we've got to do something. That was Bethany Whitaker, who was the principal at the consulting firm that you hired, Mayor. You need about $80 million over the next 10 years to be invested in the system to replace vehicles and bring staff and operations up to speed. So what are you going to do among the constituencies who are here? Who calls the meetings about this, since it's called the Chapel Hill Transit System? Mayor Kleinschmidt, is it you?
Well, we operate Chapel Hill Transit, but we do so in cooperation with our partners, and they include the university and Carrboro, and together the three own the system. And UNC actually contributes more funding than either Carrboro or Chapel Hill. Together, you know, we have to move forward on this issue together. One of the challenges that makes sustainability an issue is this unusual, unique financing arrangement between three different partners, and with only one of us operating it. In the past, we've been able to buy buses, very expensive, by the way, you know, $450,000 to $700,000, depending on what kind of bus you're going to get. And you know, we used to use federal dollars and state dollars to buy those buses. Today, that's just not that's not an option any longer. So we have to come up with other ways of buying them. So we're thinking, let's finance and lease. But because of the unusual arrangement of our partnership, we have to ask ourselves the question: okay, well, who's going to hold that debt, or how is it distributed among our partners? So we're having to ask each other different kinds of financing questions that we haven't answered them yet. So that's why the conclusion is: well, under the current model, it's not sustainable. So we have to find other solutions and other ways to finance these bus issues as well as operational issues.
So I think a critical component in all of that is that we should not underestimate is the fact that when the buses the bus system first went on the road here, mm-hmm. It cost the town relatively little. Nearly all of the money was coming from federal money and some state money, and now all of that is going away. Can the bus system here, can you continue? Well, let me read what the consultant said. He said that your consultant said in order to make the bus system financially sustainable, you've got to pass a tax to raise more money for area transit in the community that already considers itself overtaxed, or reduce service, charge bus fares, leasing, debt financing to purchase vehicles, require partners, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, UNC, to increase what they are paying. Mm-hmm. Now, what you're saying right now is that you want to borrow the money.
Well, and, you know, some of those are the same thing. Whenever you talk about charge a fare or reduce service, that's the same thing. Let's just be clear about that.
How so?
Once you start charging a fare, then the usage is going to drop, and when usage begins to drop and we do our analysis of routes, then routes will go away. And actually charging a fare means ultimately there'll be even fewer dollars. While the federal and state dollars have diminished, they haven't evaporated entirely, and we qualify for those funds based on our ridership and the vitality of our transit system. We saw the impact of eliminating the fare on the increase in ridership that qualified us for more dollars. The inverse will occur as well. You charge a fare, ridership will drop, plummet, and then we wouldn't be even more federal and state dollars would disappear.
Why do they evaporate if you have some revenue?
Because whenever we were charging a fare, I think it was like 10%, and Lydia may recall more precisely. I think our funding came about 10% of our funding for Chapel Hill Transit was coming out of the fare box.
Right.
So whenever we eliminated the fare, we qualified for more money than what we were collecting in the fare box because of the increase in the vitality of the transit system. So now if you flip it on its head, yes, there would be a new revenue stream, but it would be a trickle compared to the fire hose that would be turned off when the ridership numbers drop.
So the university is the largest funder of all of this. Chancellor Folt, how do you approach this? Are you willing to kick in more?
Well, I think it's one of the great assets of the region, so I'd say I'm completely committed to finding solutions to this. And I think it's the future. We all have to really recognize that it's a lot more expensive to build parking lots and drive cars than it would be to try to solve this problem. I'm not ready to say that we have the answer. I think Mark's right, and Lydia, we're all working very, very closely on this. It's my hope that UNC will not charge its students and employees to pay a fare, and I was very excited when I realized the students themselves actually had voted at one point to have a part of their own fees go towards this. So I think we're going to know more in the next year as we really look at it deeply. But this is an asset to this region that we have to find a way to make it work.
Any other points of view from the other constituencies?
Sure.
Mayor Lavelle?
Yes. I'd like to say, too, you know, people talk about should we charge a fare. Well, really, it's we like to say we pay the fare in advance, right?
Right.
It's a major part of each of our budgets, and it's the largest, except for employees, it's the single largest budget item, I know, in Carrboro. But it's such a priority. I know the other point I wanted to make is we all have built our land use policies around this very vibrant system. I mean, you know, we're in it together, and I know, for instance, the university, it's a major part of their planning to be able to rely on this bus system that we all have committed to. So I think we'll all find a way to make it work.
How long do you have to come up with a plan? When does the money run out?
Well, I think the question is, when do the buses stop running? when do they fall apart while they're driving at Martin Luther King?
So it's a drip, not a date.
We have some time to be able to figure this out. We asked ourselves the question, how do we move forward in financing our transit system? I think at a point in time in which, you know, the buses were still crank when you turn the key, but we know we're going to need a new car soon. So we have to start planning for how we're going to acquire that. You know, it's a little late when you're broken down on the side of the road to say, oh, darn, I should have bought a new car yesterday. We've asked ourselves that question in advance.
All right, I get the picture. We also have Blake Hodge, WCHL's news director, here this morning, ready to chime in at any time that he wishes. Blake, did I see a question from you?
Not yet.
Okay, all right.
I can always ask one if you want.
Okay. He was poised with pride, but not expectation.
Everyone else has got a lot more to say, I'm sure, before I chime in.
Golly, there must be. Let's see if we can find a way to make talking about trash sexy, because I can hear the dial. I can hear the radio click, 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 click. Nobody really wants to talk about waste storage facility. But I think everybody, every family here, everyone has to take the trash out. And you wonder, where does it go? Well, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Hillsborough have been taking its trash to Durham. What do they do with it when it gets to Durham? Mayor?
Well, they transfer it from our little trucks into really big trucks,
right,
and then they haul it away to Sampson County to an enormously large landfill.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. So you're now talking about building a new place to process garbage on Millhouse Road. Would you... And at that point, do you process it and still send it somewhere else, or do we process it and somehow turn it back into something good at that point?
Well, I don't want to make news today on where and when a transfer site would be developed in Orange County, because that's a question all of us still have to answer with each other in conversation.
Well, so not Millhouse Road.
But there is it's one possible place where there may be a transfer station. But we know that. That site is limited in its ability to meet the needs of the entire county, so it may not be where we ultimately go. But to your question, if we build a transfer station in Orange County, it's going to operate just like the one that in Durham County. We will take our trash, and it will go into big trucks, and it will be carted away somewhere else.
What do the other municipalities feel is their response? First of all, just technically, right now, do you collect UNC's garbage? Does UNC have its own system?
Several years ago, probably more than a decade ago, the university agreed to handle its waste outside of the general waste stream of the county.
Right. And where do you take yours, Chancellor?
Well, I don't know all the details about this. I've got a great team that runs this part of the university,
Jim. Don't have to get
let me put, but we do
you say
contract.
There's enough garbage in the media. I get that. So we probably don't have to talk about
No, but we have
trash.
A great team that works on it. We do contract the services.
But it contracts out. I know UNC has, I think, a recycling program, a recycling plan.
Oh, very
that's
active.
Kind of way out there. That's
very
a very
active.
Modern and very effective sort of plan. So how about the other municipalities here? What's your view on this? Earl McKee?
From a county standpoint, the landfill closure a couple of years ago effectively forced our forced our hand on what we would do. There would be, I would not expect to see another landfill open in Orange County. The discussion on siting a transfer station by the county about 4 years ago was met by fierce opposition, regardless of where the commissioners at that time tried to site it. So I think siting a landfill in Orange County is basically out of the question. So it leaves us with the question of what are we going to do with this trash? And very much like the cooperation through the SWAG Solid Waste Advisory Work Group that occurred on recycling, I think that conversation is continuing. That group continues to meet. I think that that group, by the fact that it is continuing to meet and the cooperation it has and the relationships that have built up through that work for recycling can extend over to trash. It's a given fact that we are going to generate trash to some extent. The more we can recycle, the more we reduce that tonnage that we're hauling. But currently we are hauling to Durham, the county is, along with the towns. If we can find a solution to site a transfer station, that is one more step in handling our own waste stream. The county has looked into waste-to-energy solutions, plasma generation, and several other options. None of them at this point are proving to be financially feasible. The waste stream that we generate is not large enough to make it work. There are several of these emerging technologies that are still, let me say, they're not unproven, but they are in their infancy. So we're a little bit hesitant to try to start on that. But if we can take this step by step and work with the towns in the county to try to come to some kind of a unified effort, I think we're going to be better off than each of us going our own way.
Mayor Stevens, Mayor Lavelle, any different point of view on that?
Well, several of us have been meeting to talk trash on about every month since last July as members of the Solid Waste Advisory Group, and it's been really informative in terms of really drilling down into how each municipality has been handling its trash and or recycling. And as Earl said, within the last week or two, we all came to an agreement on how we would handle our recycling. And I think, you know, through that process, you know, we learned quite a bit and talked a lot about where each group was kind of coming from. And so this discussion last night, in fact, we set out kind of next steps, you know, a list of about 10 items that we have to continue to talk about related to this topic. And just two I'll mention that haven't been mentioned yet are as we're figuring out whether we're going to transfer our trash or come up with some other solution, I know our board is always trying to talk about zero waste, Earl. I mean, Earl says we'll always generate trash. I suppose we will, but there are ways to still continue to reduce our trash along the lines of composting and or, you know, maybe eventually looking into something like pay-as-you-throw so people really, really think about what they're putting in their trash.
Mm-hmm. So the thing that comes out of all this, I think, is that the NIMBYism is alive and well, and we're not going to process our own trash here in Orange County. For the foreseeable future, we're going to be sending it to somewhere else, and the issue now is where we're going to gather it and then where we're going to send it to. Is that a fair assessment to conclude that?
And how much it's going to cost us.
And how much it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. Is the county... there's a sense a little bit in what I've been able to read in the or hear in the news reports is that there's some tension between the town and the county about the degree of cooperation in this. Have I read that correctly or not?
Yeah. Well, let me address the issue of tension between town and counties. I think there is always some amount of tension between towns and counties, regardless of where you're located, where you're talking about. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because lively discussion is healthy discussion. And if you do not have some degree of tension and some degree of diversity of ideas, you come away with a very bland and maybe not very satisfactory solution, regardless of whether you're talking about trash, transit, economic development, or anything else. So I'm not very concerned about the quote-unquote tensions that are supposedly occurring.
You disagree regarding the disposal of trash?
Well, Could I chime
Mayor Kleinschmidt.
I think that there's the idea of, you know, whether or not the way we collect trash and the efficiencies around how waste is collected and disposed of is handled the same way in rural parts of the county as it does in urban parts of the county. I think there's a distinction there. There are efficiencies in curbside pickup that where the driveways are only 10 feet apart, you know, that as opposed to 10 miles apart. And so, you know, how do we distribute the costs of the inefficiencies related to rural trash pickup to urban dwellers when it's so much more efficient? So I think that's where we're having a difficult time figuring out how that's going to work. And that came out in our recycling conversations as well. We all resolved that we were all contribute the same amount, at least as far as the recycling goes. Now we have to figure out how we're going to do the solid waste.
I think that's a good assessment. And I think that work group will come to a solution. The discussions on recycling prove that work group can work, and it worked well.
Well, one of the things that comes out of all this for a careful listener is that the folks who run for public office, particularly on the local scene, and they certainly do not do it for the fame or the power or the glory, because they spend an awful lot of time talking about where we're going to take our trash, how we're going to get it there, and things like how we're going to pay for the buses. But hearing you talk about the difference between city and county reminds me of the time when we owned the cable system here, which was my first encounter with the tension between town and county, because folks will move 20 miles out into the country but then expect to have cable delivered right to their front door at the same price as the city people. And so that leads us to, guess what, how's this for a transition, to fiber and Wi-Fi. And everybody wants Wi-Fi. You know, this is one of these things that was once a luxury, and now if we go to a restaurant, we're troubled if the restaurant even requires us to put in a password, because we have come to think of it as an entitlement. So I want to ask, if I can, about the state of what's going on with getting fiber into the county. And I'm a little confused as we were preparing for this. We all got excited here a while back when there was a Google announcement it was bringing its Google Fiber to Chapel Hill and Carrboro and the other communities around us. Sorry, Mayor Stevens, but not Hillsboro. And that stirred an awful lot of comment.
They We're still talking.
They think perhaps Google was too historic for Google Fiber. But here's what's also happened in the meantime. AT&T mm-hmm. has a program called UVerse with what they call Gigapower, and they have already been stringing the lines around, and it is available right now. And it seems, and from what I can tell, AT&T UVerse, if I don't know about the pricing, but fundamentally, the same, we got the same thing right now from AT&T that Google Fiber has told us is in the future. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, isn't that great? And you know, it didn't happen by accident. It happened because UNC and Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Raleigh and State and Duke and Durham and Wake and Winston all got together and said, how can we attract fiber to our communities? And we put out an RFP, and AT&T was the winner. And so they got ahead of Google. And now we're going to be in a competitive, high-fiber environment. The only one, I think, that compares to us is Austin, Texas.
So the question would be now, has anyone heard, might this cause Google to rethink its commitment to this area? And Tom Stevens, you had said that you and does the AT&T UVerse come to Hillsboro?
It does not come to Hillsboro at this point. And the very issues that you talked about with cable, the same thing, where you know, I'm 15 minutes from my downtown to being here at the WCHL offices, 15 minutes from downtown Durham, so we're very, very close. But at some point, getting the infrastructure in, and people make a call. So we're continuing to advocate to let's bring, you know, these internet services to the rural areas, as well as some of the outlying small town, semi-urban areas that we have, like in Hillsboro. We're continuing to open the doors, and have certainly been good partners with Chapel Hill, Carrboro, the university, and county as we're moving
along. Earl McKee.
This issue highlights where there may be different solutions required for different areas of the county. Putting in fiber is very expensive. Yep. Putting in fiber in a rural area where you may have one house every 200 or 300 yards rather than every 30 or 40 feet is a totally different situation, and it's probably not going to attract companies. The county is, and towns, I think, also are very limited by the state laws as to what we can do that would put us in a competitive position with private companies. So what the county is doing right now is we're exploring other options, wireless, any option that is available for the county to be able to bring internet access to the rural parts of the county, if for no other reason other than to be able to do your work from home, to be able to have your children be able to do their homework assignments on the computer from home without having to maybe drive down to the community center or somewhere like this where there is wireless availability. So we have a work group working right now to try to explore these options. It involves our IT department. It involves citizens who have volunteered their time to help work on this. I have spoken with Congressman Mark Walker from the 6th District that covers the northern part of the county. I mentioned this to Congressman Price. Representative Greg Meyer is working on this in Raleigh along with Representative Verla Insko and Senator Fasheed. So we in the county are very aware of the concerns and the need and are trying to find an option that works outside the of the fiber.
We're walking up to a break of the underwriters of this program, but Chancellor Folt, you wanted to add?
I just say I think this is a great conversation. 5-10 years down the road, this has got to be the innovation capital mm-hmm. in the country. We're in a competition with other regions for that, and we have such advantages, so we need to make these services available as widely as we can.
Chester, I think the university already has campus-wide Wi-Fi, don't you?
Yes.
And the towns have been talking about it, and I think it's been in various stages. Do we have one thing that I would suppose, Hillsborough is small enough over there. Do you have town-wide Wi-Fi?
We do not at this point. No.
You don't? Do you have a plan to?
Not for a municipal service, but there certainly is availability
around
CenturyLink.
The truth is, Hillsborough, in some way, part of that bucolic part is you can sneak up to about any restaurant over there and get Wi-Fi
indeed.
About anywhere in town without having the government have to provide it, which I think a lot of folks would applaud.
There is a plan that we're looking at for Churton Street in the downtown to have Wi-Fi That's available great. To anybody who wants it.
The status of townwide Wi-Fi in Carborough, Mayorville?
Well, and we have it downtown. The litigation that Earl spoke about, the FTC litigation, I think if it could make it so the towns have more control over whether they can provide broadband or Wi-Fi to their entire town.
Right. And how's the Wi-Fi working in Chapel Hill?
Well, we have a program that covers downtown, and we are focusing
working,
right now.
Is it working well? We hear complaints about it. Does
yeah,
it work well?
It's spotty, admittedly. We're going to get some improvement, though, because of this competitive environment that we're in now. As part of the RFP and our work with Google, they're actually committing to improving that level of service for people, including our public housing, neighborhoods. And you know, Google isn't scared of AT&T. Google's here, arguably, because AT&T is, and it's not going to work to push people away. They want to be here because they don't want to give up the hottest spot in America for 21st century jobs and innovation, and that's why they want to be here.
You're listening to Town and Gown here on the 2015 WCHL Community Forum, presented and underwritten by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development and by the Orange County Government, Coleman, Huntoon and Brown, the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce, Jersey Mike's, and Durham Technical Community College. If you have questions, submit them on Twitter with the hashtag WCHL Forum. This is Jim Hebner, and we'll be right back.
WCHL thanks the Town of Chapel Hill's Economic Development Office for presenting our 2015 Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open for business, open to business every day of the year. Follow them on Twitter at CHEconDev. That's CHEconDev. Economic Development in Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the Triangle.
Love is in the air. Women's Voices Chorus presents its spring concert, Love Notes, this Sunday, April 26th at 3 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church in Durham. The concert will showcase a delightful mix of pieces expressing all the ways we love and are loved, with repertoire from Renaissance music to show tunes. For information and tickets, please visit womensvoiceschorus.org. Thank you, WCHL, for caring about choral music in our community.
The University of North Carolina is facing many challenges. The ongoing academic scandal, lack of transparency, and the struggle to keep admission accessible for the best and brightest, regardless of their economic background, has kept UNC under an intense microscope. Tune in today at 9 a.m. for the UNC Under Fire discussion. It's the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Listen on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM by streaming on chapelboro.com and follow the discussion live on Twitter.
Welcome back to the 2015 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Once again, here's Jim Hevner.
Frieda, lean up and around. Our topic in this hour is Town and Gown, and I'm joined by our panelists, Chancellor Carol Folt, Mayors Mark Kleinschmidt, Lydia Lavelle, and Tom Stevens, and County Commission Chairman Earl McKee. Well, let's talk about Northside. Northside is an all-black 188-acre neighborhood in Chapel Hill that was 50 years ago was all-black, and it has been progressively integrating over that time. And over the last generation, many of the homeowners there have sold their homes to investors who rent them to students. The older African-American homeowners who have been there through all of this complain about the students who park their cars in the front yards and party and do things like students do. So now, UNC, Chancellor, has announced that you're going to give a $3 million no-interest loan that will be managed by friends from the Self-Help Credit Union to lead the acquisition of properties in the neighborhood. And then according to the announcement, Self-Help will then collaborate with community organizations to buy properties and hold them until they're ready for home ownership or rental housing. What's the objective here?
Well, I want to start off by saying, of course, a great partner for us is the town, which is also contributing financially to this agreement. It's really exciting. I think our excitement about this is that we want to help that community be strong. We're only as strong as the community that's around us, and I hope you all heard Kathy Atwater and Esper Foster talk about the importance of this town to our history and to the people who still live and work here. So we are really trying to help settle some of the problems, help make it possible for working families to stay there, and we're also working with students to have them understand what it's like to be part of a true community and to value it. The residents also talk about how much they do love students. So there's positives about that relationship that we want to enhance, and we want to eliminate the parts that are very difficult for people.
How's it going to work? It would seem to, we don't have anyone here, I think, today who seems to be in opposition to that, but Mark Patmore is a Northside neighborhood resident. He also owns several rental properties in the neighborhood. And if we have this queued up, fellas, he believes that there is a change in the way decisions are made regarding the neighborhood.
These are our properties, and we have property rights and should be involved in all the proposed zoning changes, not just asked to provide a defense after the fact. What we actually are proposing is the town council, once and for all, establish a committee that truly represents the Northside neighborhood, and that is the venue where any and all zoning changes and proposals are addressed.
To which you would say, Mayor Kleinschmidt.
Well, I would say thank you, Mr. Patmore, for being part of the committee that actually created the Northside Neighborhood Conservation District. It's curious to me that the concern here is that investors and members of the investment community weren't part of it. He actually was part of representing that segment of the community. I think we need to be thoughtful about making sure that we tap into the full array of members of the Northside community, including the investment community and Mr. Patmore and others who own rental properties. And so I think there's a good point to be made there, but I don't think that now that the scales have tipped, where so much of the property is now in the hands of the investment community, now you don't just put up the flag that should be the dominant voice.
So how do
we
you
need to be inclusive?
Well, is that not democracy?
What's that?
If the people who live and who own the property in the neighborhood generally are the ones who you look to most often for as the most important voices in determining issues relating to that neighborhood.
Well, you know, part of the good news of the American democratic experiment has been that we've abandoned the idea that only property owners have a say in the future of their community. And Northside is one of those places where, you know, we have lots of property in the hands of investors. We also have, and we have a large rental community, and all those voices need to be part of the solution of the neighborhood, not just one segment.
So how will you measure success? It was once an all-black neighborhood. It has now been reduced by, I understand that there's about a 40% reduction in the black population. That's occurred over a period of the last three decades. How will you measure success of this program, Chancellor?
Well, we're looking at things like how many long-term residents are able to remain in their homes. That's going to be very important for us. We'll certainly measure success by the extent to which we're able to attract new residents to the area.
How does this then, if you're purchasing the homes, you would be purchasing homes so that folks can stay in them? Is that the concept?
What we
need here is funding to get to provide an option for someone who's going to sell their home. And right now, the money is coming to families from investors. We'll buy your house now that, you know, grandma wants to move into a care facility, or heirs that are now left with a property, don't know what to do, and they don't even live here anymore, and they want to unload. Investors are coming in with cash. What we need is another option for people. And then sell it to families and others who will help improve the stability of the neighborhood. So that's how these funds are going to work, and that's why it's a revolving fund. It's not going to come into the hands of the owners, town or into the hands of the university.
I think the questions that we get asked are the owners of the rental homes. Does that destabilize? We have student housing all over the community. Yeah. Are those neighborhoods destabilized?
No, I don't think that all neighborhoods in Chapel Hill where there's rental property are destabilized, right. But there is a point in which where I think a neighborhood that gets to this level of investment activity is at risk of being unstable, and I think Northside it has reached that tipping point.
I think another way to look at it is see where self-help has already been working. Mm. And they have really beautified neighborhoods. They've made them very attractive. And it's important for our entire region that every neighborhood feel like a thriving neighborhood, because that attracts people to a region. So there's a lot of things that aren't quite so obvious in the way you state this that can be the result. And I think we're excited about working with self-help based on their success.
The reason that I raised this question is because those folks who are skeptical about the desirability of trying to keep this as a black neighborhood, which they would see as a resegregation of the town. Howard Lee, who became Chapel Hill's first black mayor, moved into Colony Woods, which was an all-white neighborhood about 50 years ago. I was here. How many of you? But there, across here in Chapel Hill, a cross was burned in Howard and Lillian's yard, and many in that neighborhood worried about their property values. And today, it is integrated, not the same place it was 50 years ago. So Howard Lee told WCHL, who's not here, part of this. He said, "I think we can learn from history, but not be enslaved by it. The world is changing. Therefore, the expectation should be that the character of neighborhoods should also change." He said, "You might recall that I worked hard to bring the Northside Development Program to Chapel Hill to help revitalize and preserve Northside. Then, when I became mayor, the roads were still unpaved. I got them paved. It should not be expected that Northside should be preserved any differently than any other part of Chapel Hill, which is changing in character, such as high-rise buildings. I think it should be viewed as progress when students and other ethnic groups are moving into the area. At least from a structural perspective, anyone investing in property in the area will make sure the quality is kept in sound repair." He did say, "On the other hand, I'm delighted that this debate is ongoing, which might help everybody think more broadly about what the future might bring." So the Chapel Hill's first black mayor is skeptical of whether trying to what appears to be trying to keep this neighborhood more black.
Well, let's be clear that I don't think that that's the goal of anybody. And I don't know where this is coming from, because the idea that...
Those are the mayor's words.
No, I think everyone agrees with mayor's words. What I think that there's disagreement around is what is being perceived as the goal of this program. Talking about neighborhood stability, we're talking about having people be able to remain in their homes, having a neighborhood where everyone is welcome, including families, not just folks who are looking for temporary rental opportunities.
So the perception then, you're saying, is that they are not welcome now?
I think that there is a great deal of pressure on families who particularly families have multi-generational relationships with the neighborhood, to be able to remain in those homes and have them continue to be places where families can feel comfortable and live. Whenever your neighbors are changing every 6 to 12 months, it becomes a different kind of place than when you have children and your neighbor has children and they go to school together for 12 years. It's a different neighborhood.
I think no one would doubt. There couldn't be anyone that would disagree with the idea that the most vibrant communities are ones that have a mix of working families, seniors, and students. And I think this is an initiative absolutely designed to maintain that kind of balance in a thoughtful, inclusive way. And I think we're proud to be a part of it. It's important to take risks, to try things in a developing, rapidly growing region. If we don't do it, who would? And so I think that's really how we all see it.
Well, campuses are always controversial, but Chancellor, on top of all the other travails that UNC is experiencing with its other series of scandals, there's right now a national scandal, it seems, of sexual assault on the campuses. Chancellor, I don't recall, we're watching the changing times, maybe changing environments. Was this a hot button issue when you were at Dartmouth?
I think everybody who's been in higher education has been aware that sexual assault is an issue on campuses as long as I can remember. There is certainly a renewed focus, and I actually am really pleased about that. I think it's very important, and it's happening, you know, across the country. I was on a panel recently with student activists from UNC who have been quite important in this, and I think it's really necessary that we grapple with this issue, and we do it in a thoughtful and, again, very inclusive way. We have to hear all the voices.
So could I infer from that that this is not, that you didn't say this specifically, but that, that the issue's been around for a long time. Do you think that it has increased, or are we just giving it more attention?
I think people have really tried to look at the evidence for that. I don't think anyone really knows where the actual incidents are greater or whether the reporting and focus is greater. And to me, the real no sexual assault is ever acceptable. So the actual increase isn't as important as the fact that we're talking about it, we're becoming more aware of it, and if we do our job well, we may see increased reporting because we'll make it possible for people to come forward seeking help and help them get the assistance that they need. So I think we don't know the long term, but we certainly know that the reporting and the conversation has increased.
Because of the nature of rape and sexual assault, it's a violent crime, but it has a social implication. It has social stigma that sort of seems to somehow touch everyone who somehow gets involved in any of these stories. I would say to the mayors here, when we have if there is a sexual assault reported on the campus historically, and I think that most folks now agree inadvisedly, a lot of this has stopped at the campus edge. But today the police in communities are more involved in not just leaving these to campus police or to university honor courts. When there is a sexual assault on the campus, Lydia, involving a Carborough, if there's a sexual assault with a student of someone that lives in Carborough, do you see that as a UNC issue or is that a Carborough issue?
Well, it's certainly a community issue. So it definitely is our issue as well as the university's. Jim, I wanted to kind of do a little follow-up to the chancellor. You know, I think another reason that we see so much about this is because of social media. I mean, think about the days when it was just simply a phone call or trucking down to the police department. But now, anything that even borders on sexual assault is out in the, you know, in the internet or in the blogosphere immediately. And so I think that actually contributes to the problem.
without a doubt. And out of that, I'm not sure where the number comes from, but the report that 20% of college women are assaulted while they are in school. I mean, that is a, it is a stunning statistic. Does anyone doubt that? Does anyone believe that that's true?
As I said, there's lots of debate about the number, and I actually think that's, in a way, the wrong question. Chapel Hill is part of the AAU decision to create a campus climate survey. It's going to be going to some of the top universities in the country. We're all filling that out. Our students are participating, and it's a chance for the very first time for the universities across the country to come together, talk to our communities, understand the incidents and the nature. It's a very detailed survey. It goes into a lot of detail about different types of encounters with students and what creates the reporting levels that we see. So I think in the next couple of years we're going to know a lot more about that, Jim.
Mayor Stevens?
Well, I just want to echo what the Chancellor is saying about asking the right questions. And I've had previously about a 30-year career in social work, and seeing similar issues come up about child abuse, about child sexual abuse, about domestic violence, about sexual violence through women. And now there's a lot of focus on campus, but the issues tend to get a lot of public attention. There seems to be a lot of debate about how many, or is it increasing, or is it just perception? And those are the wrong questions. We need to make it safe for people in our community, and that's where our focus needs to be.
Now, the university has been taking, has gotten very active in this. Students, as a matter of fact, students and faculty and staff are all now required to complete a training course in these issues. You started this, I think it was announced in January, and everyone had 45 days to sign up for it, so it was mandatory. Where are we in the queue on that? Has that been completed? Is it now ongoing? And how's that going, Chancellor?
We're actually quite ahead of most universities in the country, I think, because we began a year earlier on this amazing task force, which, by the way, also included community members, because we do see this not simply as a university issue. This really is a community issue, and we're over 80% of the people have actually taken that training program. We're still getting the last people to take it. I am so proud of that response from the community, and that's faculty, students, and staff. So I'll know more after we have all the data together, and we'll be giving it again next year. And we're getting feedback this whole summer from people to find out, how did that help? Were the questions sensible? What did you need to learn? So again, we're always experimenting as educators, and we're using that to inform that training program.
Students have always looked forward to a place when they can get away from home and have a few more beers than their parents would let them do. But there is also a sense that the that binge drinking as a social phenomenon seems to be greater now than it was in previous generations. So, am I correct in would we all agree that most of the assaults that are alleged occur when there is a lot of drinking going on? Do we have general agreement on that? Mayor, you have a quizzical Mayor Clint Smith, you have a quizzical look on your face about that.
I think it's an interesting question. I'm not sure you can with a lot of confidence say use words like most or identifying any specific predominant factor. I think if we could, then it may be even easier to address. I think clearly alcohol plays a role in many, and it's certainly an issue that we have to be addressing alongside the issues around sexual assault. And in doing that, back when Chancellor Thorpe was here, we began a process that now Chancellor Folt has embraced to address binge drinking and excessive alcohol use among students on campus as well as out in the community. And it is a great program now, working with Chief Kraken, Chief Blue, as well as the Chancellor and Mayor's office, to begin to address those issues. And hopefully, if that's just one, I think, of many issues that orbit around the sexual assault conversation. So I don't think we can solve all the sexual assault concerns that we have by addressing just binge drinking, but we're never going to get at all of them if we don't also address that. And so
Chancellor.
Yeah, I think binge drinking and other forms of high-risk alcohol consumption are public health issues. We have to take those on. They're really critical to us. I've been so enthusiastic by the work that's already taking place here. I saw that we also just implemented a program called Basics, which is a wonderful program shown to be one of the most effective programs that helps people stop, repeat binge drinking, high-risk alcohol. This is actually an issue that I was quite proud of what Dartmouth was doing as well. But again, it's something that universities across the country are doing, but the ones that are going to be successful will be in great partnerships with their local communities. It's the only way for us to do it, to work with Mark, to work with Lydia, and even Tom and Earl. So I think we'll make progress when we work together on it.
Our time is getting short, but I'm curious about one thing. This is their intergenerational tensions, just as their town-gown tensions and their city-rural tensions. There's intergenerational tensions as long as we have intergenerations. When the students, for example, who would come to these programs, they're sober and responsible and checking off and being there because they have to, just as we sit with our parents. There's probably no way really to know until some time has passed whether this kind of effort, it's absolutely on the side of the angels, but whether it works or not.
Absolutely not. You can find out pretty quickly if it works. A lot of it targets students who have already been in trouble for drinking. They can go through a program and you can follow the rest of their career and see if they've actually never come forward again. So I think there are ways
to... So your program, make sure I understand, your program that you initiated this January, it has...
The specific training program is about sexual assault. That program, I think we have to rely more on the way we get reporting. We have to do follow-ups with people to find out, did that information help? I thought you meant on the binge drinking. You can see really quick results.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Yes. And it is obviously an extraordinarily complicated issue. Tom Stevens?
Yeah, and Jim, just as a public health issue, we have a program in Hillsboro community group to address the issues of underage drinking, which of course is connected to binge drinking, and that's something that is very, very important to us. So again, these things are connected. Trying to make too strong a connection or solving one will solve the others is probably not the way to go.
Earl McKee?
I think that it's, for me it's foregone conclusion that alcohol consumption, especially excessive alcohol consumption, leads and increases the probability of bad decisions, regardless of what those bad decisions are. Through the county and through the ABC program that provides funds for programs that are anti-alcohol and reducing alcohol use. So the county is involved in supporting programs for education and remediation for alcohol abuse.
We have 2 hours of topics and 1 hour to try to squeeze it in, and our hour is about gone. And very quickly, is there any news on the development of University Square downtown? Is that moving along? And when are we going to see some demolition soon?
The construction fences have gone up. We're very excited about it. And Mark and I are going to have another very exciting announcement, not today, but very soon, about things happening down there. So I think this is going to be a wonderful project.
When is the current expectation that we will see someone beginning to use all of that, that in effect the contractors hand back the key to you and say this is done?
Fall 2017.
So very quickly, next couple of years. And Mayor, you've been able to duck the discussion of taxes and the high cost of living in Chapel Hill. But the quick question is, do you worry more here? Do you worry more about taxes and Mayor LaBelle? And do you worry more about taxes and the high cost of living or delivering the services that you want to deliver? What do you think the most about? What's on your mind the most?
I think it's about balancing those two things. My concern is that we're going to tip one to such a degree that it makes the other impossible. Whether we are in our effort to try to provide the highest quality, best service of any community in America, and what those costs are, and how then those costs affect the livability of our community, and it's trying to balance those needs. And we've had very difficult conversations with folks over the last 4 or 5 years since the economic downturn where we've had to rethink what we mean by high quality municipal services. And so, you know, that we're I think addressing both sides of that.
I have another quick question. It'll be interesting to know whether the answer is in the negative or the positive here. Chancellor, when we started this forum many, many years ago, we go back to Chancellors Fordham, Harding, and Hooker all the way back there. I don't remember during Chancellor Meeser's term whether he discussed the fact that they used to ask the town to say, okay, the town needs to find a way to provide more places to live here and, more importantly, jobs for faculty and spouses of those who work at UNC. Is that still an issue, or are jobs growing fast enough now? And we have plenty with all the development going on. Is that an issue now?
We're in a very competitive environment for attracting the best faculty in the world.
Right.
So every single thing that we could do to provide great communities to live in, opportunities for jobs, great schools, that's what attracts faculty. So we always look at it. We're in a growing region with a lot of high-end jobs, so that tends to really help us, but I think about it all the time.
Yeah, my sense is that with all the development we've seen around here, as the university, as Chapel Hill has become, in some respects, de-universityized, as it's, we've had other, that's a term we just made up, as we've had all these other developments around here, that it also has created more opportunity for jobs for the faculty spouses.
It's absolutely been true. And in fact, we get a lot of comments from people that have businesses outside Chapel Hill who come to us and say, we're happy to be partners with you in hiring decisions or offering opportunities. So I think we are a market with some of our partners, and it's helpful.
Well, if we could just knock off the next hour's panel, then we could stay here and do this for another hour. But I want to thank, what a terrific panel. And to our audience, you've been listening to Town and Gown here on the 2015 WCHL Community Forum. Our thanks to our wonderful panelists here, Chancellor Carol Folt, Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinsmith, Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle, Orange County Board of Commissioners Chair Earl McKee, Hillsborough Mayor Tom Stevens. You can hear this and every other hour of today's forum on our website, chapelborough.com, and we'll also be re-airing it here on WCHL in the coming weeks. I'm Jim Hefner. Thanks for listening.